Vous écoutez Camille parle sexe, votre podcast bien-être sexuel inspirant. Je suis Camille Bataillon, sexologue clinicienne. Dans ce podcast, vous l'aurez compris, je parle de sexe, de la sexualité au sens large. Ce podcast se veut un endroit plein de douceur pour parler de la sexualité avec des informations de qualité et des outils concrets pour vous apporter votre dose d'inspiration pour votre intimité. Avec mes invités ou en solo, je souhaite vous donner la crème de la crème en sexologie pour réfléchir ensemble à la sexualité et vous offrir le meilleur de l'éducation sexuelle. J'espère ainsi vous inspirer dans votre intimité, que ce soit seul, à deux ou à plusieurs, et faire vibrer votre sexualité. Alors, bienvenue.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Le premier mois de l'année est en train de se terminer. On se retrouve pour ce dernier épisode du mois de janvier 2023. Alors c'est un épisode en anglais, on aime les épisodes en anglais, on aime découvrir des experts internationaux, enfin en tout cas moi j'apprécie parce que ça permet de traiter des thématiques qui des fois en France ou en francophonie, on l'aborde pas forcément, comme par exemple le sujet d'aujourd'hui, le cannabis, qui peut être encore en France très controversé et illégal, mais qui est utilisé par exemple aux États-Unis et dans certains États comme un moyen médical, un moyen thérapeutique pour soulager différentes problématiques. Mais ici, on va principalement se focaliser dans le milieu de la sexualité et plus principalement cibler les femmes et plus principalement cibler les femmes qui ont du mal à avoir des orgasmes. Est-ce que l'utilisation de cannabis peut les aider? Et si oui, de quelle manière? Et pour ce faire, je reçois à mon micro Suzanne Mulvehill et le docteur Tischler. Ils travaillent ensemble. Suzanne Mulvehill, elle est sexologue clinicienne et spécialiste des troubles de l'orgasme féminin. Elle est actuellement en train de faire un doctorat sous la supervision du docteur Tischler. Elle a créé un compte qui s'appelle, enfin plus qu'un compte, elle a créé un site internet qui s'appelle The Orgasm Project et elle conduit une étude, une recherche pour évaluer l'effet éventuel du cannabis sur les femmes qui ont des difficultés à avoir un orgasme. Et c'est en contactant Suzanne qu'elle m'a dit que ça serait super aussi d'inviter Dr Tischler, qui est son superviseur, pour discuter à trois de tout ça. Enfin, surtout eux, parce que moi, en soi, je ne connais pas grand-chose du cannabis et de ce que c'est vraiment et de comment ça peut aider dans la sexualité. Et donc, ces deux experts vont nous expliquer tout au long de l'épisode comment ça fonctionne. Et le docteur Jordan Tischler, il est spécialiste du cannabis, et oui, ça existe, et il est auteur d'une variété de sujets liés justement aux applications médicales du cannabis. Vous l'aurez compris, mes invités sont américains. Là où ils utilisent le cannabis, c'est légal. Dans cet épisode, on va revenir sur ce qu'est exactement le cannabis et la forme de cannabis qui est utilisée justement dans les recherches en sexologie. De quelle manière le cannabis peut aider les femmes à atteindre des sensations plaisantes, des sensations orgasmiques, et d'ailleurs quelles peuvent être les causes qui font qu'elles ont du mal à ressentir du plaisir, à atteindre l'orgasme. D'ailleurs, j'aborderai avec eux aussi la question de comment on peut définir l'orgasme et de comment aussi on peut évaluer l'orgasme. Donc ça, c'est aussi intéressant d'avoir leurs avis vis-à-vis de ça. Et puis aussi, à la fin, je pose la question pour les hommes, est-ce que ça a aussi un intérêt d'utiliser du cannabis? Et si oui, de quelle manière? Je vous souhaite une très belle écoute. I almost know nothing about the topic about cannabis and the impact on sexual life. So your knowledge will be very valuable. Thank you, Dr. Tischler and Suzanne, to be on the show. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
So first, could you both introduce yourself and then tell us what you find exciting about your work?
Yes. Hi. Thank you for having us on the show, Camille. My name is Suzanne Mulvihill, and I'm a PhD student for the last 2.5 years doing research on cannabis as a possible treatment for female orgasmic disorder in women who have difficulty orgasming. And Dr. Tischler has been my dissertation advisor and for the last 2.5 years and has been a great resource and just a very filled with knowledge on cannabis as a treatment for sexual dysfunction. So I'd like to pass it along to Dr. Tischler.
My name is Jordan Tischler. I'm a physician at Harvard Medical School. I practiced emergency medicine for a very long time, and that led me to be interested in cannabis as a medicine. And I now run a practice, it's been about 10 years, of treating patients with a variety of problems using cannabis as a medicine. And along the way, I got interested in cannabis as a medicine for various sexual dysfunction or difficulties. And I was honored to meet Suzanne, and we've gotten very deep into research around the ways in which cannabis can be used to help women achieve more or better orgasms. And that's a huge issue for women that where we don't really have a lot of treatment. So this really moves things forward for women.
Yeah, and it's very exciting work. And my other questions was like, what do you find exciting about your work? Like a specific things about your work that you find very exciting?
Well, I'm always a fan of being able to make other people's lives better. And so that really underpins all of my work in medicine with cannabis. But in particular, I think that issues around sexuality in women and men and people of all genders, quite frankly, is underdiagnosed and undertreated. And we have very little in the way that we can offer, at least on a pharmacologic level. So this is very exciting because now we have really good data at this point to show that women can benefit from the use of cannabis for a wide range of sexual issues. And now, as Suzanne is going to talk about, we're starting to get really data that's specific to orgasm.
Yeah, and I'll add in, thank you, Dr. Tischler. I think for me, one of the things that's most exciting about this research in particular is it asks the question of, does a woman have difficulty orgasming or not? And in reviewing nearly 1,000 articles on cannabis and female sexual dysfunction, female sexual difficulty. I like the word difficulty better than disorder or dysfunction, that no research has been done that specifically asked that question. Does a woman have difficulty? And we, in this study, we really narrowed it down just to partnered sex because that really, we wanted to just be very clear and succinct about the research, not asking if they are able to orgasm with masturbation. We wanted it in one particular area. And so that's where our data is showing that it is helping. And we're in the process of writing up a journal article that will reveal the statistics and the information that shows how it's helping, in what ways it's helping, and which women it is helping. Because there's only one treatment for female orgasmic disorder. And that treatment was developed in the 1970s called directed masturbation. It's only the validated treatment. And that's only for women who've never had an orgasm, which is actually the smallest percentage of women. So the majority of women that have difficulty have what's called situational orgasmic difficulty, where they can orgasm in some situations such as masturbation, but they can orgasm with a partner. So that is where this potentially has my theme, what I have desired to develop over these years, has been proven pathways to orgasm for women. And having been a woman who was affected by this difficulty for many years and saw four sex therapists over more than 30 years, you know, I say that because I'm one of these women. And I say it also because, well, it's what prompted me to do this research and to see what else is helping. What are other women's experiences? And Dr. Tischler helped develop what was called an observational research study.
Yes. All research is me-search, right?
I interviewed a woman. Go ahead.
Exactly. Sorry, Susan, before going further into the research, because this is very interesting and I want we go further. But first, because as I said, I know almost nothing about it, about cannabis. So what is exactly cannabis? Is it legal? Like, I don't know.
Okay. So cannabis is a plant, right? And cannabis can be grown and the flowering part of the plant can be cut and dried, and typically people might smoke that, and you get some chemicals that are called cannabinoids. The one that's most prevalent and most widely talked about is called THC, and THC has great medical value. It also causes intoxication or high, and so it gets used for fun recreationally, as well as it can be used as a medication. And there are other ways that it can be used, but that's sort of the gist of it. And as to your question about legality, the answer is it depends on where you are and what you're doing with it.
Let's say in France or United States, it's both
sure.
of them.
So I was going to start with the United States because it's a good example of what we shouldn't do. So every state in the United States has taken a different approach to it. Some of them allow it for medical use only. Some of them allow it for medical use and recreational use. And then some states don't allow it at all. The number of states that don't allow it at all is getting to be a fairly small number. But in all of the states, the reasons you can use it and how you get it and all of that sort of stuff is very different. And so it depends on where you are. At some point, I hope that we will, in the United States, have a national policy so that everybody gets treated the same way and that people can move around the country without having to worry about breaking the law or, frankly, even just running out and needing more and not being able to get any. There are in their European Union, various countries at various stages of dealing with this. So, you know, Britain has made medical cannabis available, but not very available. Ireland is thinking about skipping medical and just going to recreational. France is interesting because I think it's the furthest behind of all of the European nations.
I'm not surprised.
I'm a little surprised. I mean, the French seem generally to be, you know, laissez-faire, right? But not in this case. There's a psychiatrist whose name I don't remember, but in Paris, who worked with the government and developed a pilot program for medical cannabis. And apparently that went on for several years and was very successful. And then somebody in the government said no, and that went away. And that is, as far as I know, as far as medical cannabis has gotten in France, which is too bad because it seemed like that was going in the right direction and there was major setback. So I think for the French, we're still a little bit behind where we'd like to be.
Thank you for the precisions. And so the title of this episode is based on your research, Suzanne, which is like cannabis, medical cannabis could be a treatment for female orgasmic disorder. So as you were saying, like you are doing a survey with I think more over 1,000 of women, right, responding to the survey, and now you are collecting all the data. I don't know if you can tell more about already the data that you have and also what is the goal of the research.
Okay. Well, I think the goal of the research, I'm going to leave this to Dr. Tischler because he explains this better. He's been a researcher for a long time. I'm a student. And if that's okay, Dr. Tischler, he's fully aware of all of our results, and I'd like to give him an opportunity. I can expand on them if he'd like, but I prefer, because this is his expertise.
You know, I think you're selling yourself short there a little bit. I'll try to give you some things to respond to. Ultimately, the goal really was to figure out whether cannabis was helping women have more and better orgasms. And specifically, as Suzanne had mentioned, in the context of partnered sex. And we have colleagues who have previously done research, like Dr. Becky Lynn, who looked at, are women using cannabis for sex sort of in the broad sense? And were they having better sex because of it? And the answer from her study was yes. The women who are using cannabis for sex were generally reporting more satisfying encounters. So we wanted to refine that and more specifically ask about orgasm, not just kind of global sex, right? I mean, we often say in the sexuality field that we don't want to chase the orgasm, right? That you want to learn to enjoy the experience in whatever form it comes. And that's sort of the broadest sense of understanding sexuality. But then again, it's also good to have an orgasm, especially if it's something that as an individual you're interested in. And I think most people, perhaps not all, but most people, that is a focal point of sexual activity. So the question really was, is the cannabis helping not just sort of the big picture of sex, but really this one narrow area mm-hmm. amongst women who are reporting difficulty, right? Because there are also women who may be saying, I have plenty of orgasms when I have sex, but I have even more or even better when I use cannabis. And that's a slightly different group. We could even kind of say they're not having difficulty, so this is kind of a recreational addition, and there's nothing wrong with that, right? I mean, more and better sounds great, but we're looking specifically at women who identify that they're not getting where they want to be by themselves, and can this medicine help them achieve that kind of satisfaction?
And I think that is the key word, medicine. That when we look at cannabis as a medicine for women, you know, cannabis has been given has had a difficult route in terms of being represented as a medicine for many, many, many years, many decades, and including myself, you know, having been brought up in a drug-free, you know, being considered a drug and being classified as a drug, and to change my mindset to see this as medicine. So I think that's a really important point when we look at the word cannabis and have respect for it from that perspective. And going back to this research, there were two real key research articles that I feel like my research was built upon. One was Dr. Becky Lynn that Dr. Tischler has referenced and I had mentioned earlier. What she found was that there was a frequency of use. Women who used cannabis more frequently were 2.13 times more likely to orgasm. So my research, and Dr. Tischler and I presented at several cannabis clinical outcomes research conference and a journalist sexual medicine conference in 2021, to look at the theories why that could be that women are orgasming more frequently with cannabis. Like, what could be some reasons, which is a different topic in a sense. It takes us down a different route if we were to look at that. The other research article was by Dr. Kasman in 2020, who found that women who use cannabis more frequently, again, this theme of frequency, were 21% more likely to have sexual dysfunction issues go down if they had anything in the six domains of sexual dysfunction, which include orgasm, pain, arousal, desire, lubrication. Those are several of them. That if they had any of that, they used the Female Sexual Function Index, which is a validated survey, and women who use cannabis more frequently those issues decline by 21% with more frequent cannabis use. So there is a, it is showing from these research, from these articles to be medicinal. And now, you know, knowing that for 50 years, the statistics haven't changed of women who have difficulty orgasming. And that was research out of, with his name is Dr. Kontula out of Finland, Osmo Kontula. For that statistic has not changed for 50 years of women who have difficulty orgasming.
And why they have difficulties to reach orgasm? What can be the causes?
That's a good question. Well, one of Dr. Kontula's concerns was that women focus more on male, their male pleasure than their own. Why that is? I would think their relationship, the quality of their relationship. I found it interesting in our research that the majority of women were very satisfied with their relationship. So relationship satisfaction is a component. Also found it interesting that single women weren't as likely to complete my survey as women who were in relationships. So, you know, expounding on why a lot of women have what's called cognitive distractions. There's research about women who are in their head, goal orientation. They want to have the orgasm. Some women aren't sure if they're having them or not. They, you know, there are 23 or so different definitions of what an orgasm means. So, you know, I still find it kind of interesting that we're able to define a problem without really knowing what the question is in terms of what is this thing, orgasm. Those are some of the things that come to my mind, and Dr. Tischler may want to expound on that a little bit more if he'd like.
Everything you said is absolutely on point. I think a lot of it stems from trauma of various sorts, and that trauma can come from different sources. So clearly women who have been physically abused and or raped, that's kind of the obvious nuclear event. But I think that the traumas can be much smaller, but over long periods of time by, say, parents expressing negative attitudes about sexuality, about prohibitions against self-pleasure or any sorts of pleasure. There's clearly also some both religious level as well as society level stigmas that traumatize, you know, the women aren't supposed to enjoy it or whatever, you know, kind of craziness gets messaged to girls and young women. I think a lot of that can stand in their way. And that gets, I think, a lot to what Suzanne was saying about sort of being in one's head, and that it seems, because I'm not a woman, but it seems that the process of relaxing both body and mind to be in the moment and not overly focused on what's going to happen in the next minute or after they're done or whatever, those things are really important to sort of let the physiology happen. And I think that's when we talk to women about their cannabis use, we know that cannabis functions in many different ways throughout the body, both sort of locally at the genital level, as well as, you know, at the spinal cord and in the brain, in the cognitive centers, as well as the emotional centers. But I think that if we were really trying to figure out where the largest impact is, it's really in that the changes that happen in the emotional centers that allow that kind of letting go of the distractions, of those traumas, and being present in the moment.
It's very, very interesting, everything you said. It's true, and it's one of my questions as well. Like, how can you measure, like, women having an orgasm? If it's subjective, objective, because I like to, in sessions, you know, to go back with a woman to a broader definition of orgasm as well. Like, as for me, but I know it can be controversial for some other people, but like based on through sex approach, like any type of pleasure is already orgasmic state. So I wonder how you measure that in the research.
Well, we're not measuring that in this particular research. We are asking women for their opinions. So there is that subjectivity. We're saying, did you have an orgasm and was it good, right? And then that's up to her to decide and to report. There have been other studies. There was a study that was done, many years ago, 10, 15 years ago in Britain, where they actually developed a device. I think they called it the orgasm meter. And basically it was a dildo that would be inserted that would measure wetness and contractions, right? And we've seen that there are now commercial products out there like vibrator from Lioness, et cetera, which respond to or measure vaginal contractions as a proxy for orgasm. I'm not sure how accurate that is because I don't know the degree to which every woman has measurably forceful contractions of the vagina at orgasm, but that's sort of the approximation and as close to an objective measure as we have. Probably not super great, but it's what we have.
I'm asking because, yeah, for sure, for me, like as, like the definition of orgasm is based, could be based and most of the time based on a medical approach, physical, what we can measure by a physical activity, right? The contraction on the vagina. But it also like a subjective approach of being completely like in your bubble, completely freed from like, you know, the pleasure and being in a very pleasurable state of mind. And this is very difficult to measure. But as you said, we can ask the woman if they know that it can be part of the definition of orgasm as well.
Very good.
This is like my question mark. You know?
I think it's a very valid question mark. I can also say that, you know, on the male side of the equation, we have a tendency to assume that if the male ejaculates, that defines an orgasm, right? And on some level it does, but if you ask men carefully, and it's very hard to ask men because they don't want to talk about anything, right? But if you ask them, sometimes when they ejaculate, it feels better than other times, right? I mean, so there are all orgasms are good, but there are good ones and there are great ones, right? And so that's probably analogous, right? There's not kind of that obvious ejaculation in many women, but there is definitely that kind of gradation of the value of the outcome.
So you were saying like the causes of having sexual, like having an orgasm disorder or the difficulty of reaching orgasm could be like, you know, like cognitive distraction, trauma, could be like if you are, you know, not getting along with your partner or if you're not enough excited or if you have like very low sex education, also the mental load. I don't know if it's the right terms in English, but the charge mentale, meaning as we know that women in heterosexual relationship have a lot of tasks, mm-hmm. a lot of to-do list in their brain, which also leads them to not be able to completely be in the present moment as well. And as you were saying, and cannabis could help in mm-hmm. the relaxing state.
Absolutely.
And I'd love to tie something in here that you said, Camille, about that altered kind of state of absorption. It's been referred to in research as a state of absorption or an altered state of consciousness. One of the things that I found so interesting in the research was on the most recent conventions in deciding on a definition of female orgasm and male orgasm, that female orgasm had an altered state as a component of it, that women enter like more of an altered state, and where it didn't say that about male orgasm. Now, I don't know, you know, I'm not a male, so I can't speak to that. However, one of the things that I find so interesting is that one of the things that cannabis does, and that has been proven in research, is it reduces activity in the amygdala, the part of the brain that stores trauma. So that was one of the theories that I listed as why women are more likely to orgasm, and what Dr. Tischler and I had presented on at a conference was about this theory of the amygdala reduction theory that shows that cannabis reduces the activity, the trauma, in the activity of the brain. And the other one was the altered state of consciousness theory, where it takes, in using cannabis, myself, I only started using it a few years ago myself, and it was very difficult for me to allow myself to slip into an altered state. It took me several months to, I mean, I literally would hold on to the bed and ask, like, when is this going to be over, this feeling? Because it was, my brain was like, listen, we can do everything for you. We know how to write news. We know how to write. We know how to get work done. We know how to make money. But that part of my brain can't give me an orgasm. That part of my brain has to be, I used to have to tell her to go watch television when I first started. Like, you're going to go watch a movie and we're just going to let this other altered state, trust the altered state of consciousness, for lack of a better word. This is from my own personal experience. So I had to learn how to find and trust this altered state of myself, because my brain is, I have a very active brain and I'm always thinking, and I didn't know how to relax that.
Yeah, super interesting, Suzanne, because when I listen to a woman who have trouble to reach orgasm, I kind of define a profile, which is usually women who are thinking a lot. A lot, that are in control in their life, which is very, very good when you're at work, right? To be productive, to be performant, to do things. But when you're in bed or when you're in your intimate life, could be, you know, very difficult to just relax, to enjoy, to be in your bubble, and to take time also to connect with your body.
That's the spot, to take the time. And, you know, this kind of leads us into kind of the more of the solutions aspect of women who may have this difficulty of taking time, you know, developing a pleasure practice, like teaching the body to get used to pleasure, even individually, you know, starting with the self versus in a relation, you know what I mean? They can start with themselves developing a pleasure practice. And meditation has been proven, you know, to be one of the components of helping women experience more sexual pleasure. It's a multifaceted, I would say, problem and a multifaceted solution.
A lot of what you've described here are learning processes, right? Whether it's learning to tolerate or even enjoy the altered state with cannabis, in some ways, and we haven't really addressed this, but that learning process is almost, could be viewed as a teaching process for then being able to learn how to relax into the orgasm. So maybe less the
100%.
Maybe it's the cannabis medicine is facilitating the orgasm, or maybe it's facilitating getting into the state where you can have the orgasm. And it may turn out, and this is an interesting question, maybe we should circle back on research wise, is how many women continue to have better orgasms even after they stop using cannabis, right? So maybe you need to use cannabis for a year or two to kind of learn how to orgasm, and then maybe you don't need the cannabis any longer. That would be interesting. I haven't seen that.
Go ahead, Camille.
I wanted to say, like, it's so interesting, and I like, we are so, so exciting about it. But like, my questions after your talk, Suzanne, I was like, okay, yeah, mindfulness has proven the benefits. So why we will be using cannabis? And then Dr. Tischler, when you were talking, I was like, okay, maybe for the woman, because we know the profile of this woman, they don't want to take the time. They want to have it fast, quick, efficient. So maybe first step could be using cannabis in order to just be more in a relaxing state where they can maybe more absorb sex education, taking the time to learn about themselves, to communicate with their partner, to feel less stressed about, you know, performance or what people will think about them or their bodies. And while they have this, we can implement also more mindfulness exercise tools. And as you were saying, Dr. Tischler, then maybe, you know, after, I don't know how many months, how many years, but then might be like, okay, cannabis, I don't need it anymore. I have all the tools I need now to be in this state of mind where I can just enjoy the pleasure.
I think that's well said. And as someone who's meditated for many years, I can tell you that meditation alone wasn't the solution for me. I needed the medicine to facilitate to understand what it really an altered state of consciousness is. And to be able to go there with a medicine, to access it with medicine. So we'll leave that aside. And I wanted to just share about women I've been interviewing and just give you a general view of women who have been surprised by cannabis. women who have stumbled on, for lack of a better word, sexual desire and sexual arousal when using cannabis, and going to do some research and finding out, wow, that's where this is coming from. You know, and I had one woman that I interviewed, she went and bought a vibrator because she was like, her husband wasn't as interested, and she just found herself getting more, having arousal. She was taking it for pain and finding herself sexually aroused. With, she said, her at 71 years old, this woman is having better sex than she's ever had in her whole life using cannabis, and that she can orgasm, whether she's driving in her car, she can orgasm out in the, you know, at any time she wants, basically. So I think orgasm is like a state of, can be a, in being in an altered state, orgasm is a state of being. So learning how to be in the state of being of orgasm is a practice, as a practice.
It is a practice, yes. And I've heard also that cannabis could help also with menopause, which could also help maybe this woman as well feeling better, or like the symptom of menopause, plus, you know, learning all this about our bodies. So I think it's amazing, the whole thing we can do about cannabis. And to be also more concrete, and here it's a question for Dr. Tischler, what is the best cannabis delivery method? Like concretely, if we want to do it, and if it's legal in our country, in our state, how we do?
Sure. So that's a great question. And I would answer it by saying that there are many different ways that we can take cannabis. Certainly everybody thinks about smoking. Smoking isn't really very safe for us. So I recommend we don't smoke. And I think that people, if they think past smoking, then they think about edibles, stuff you can take by mouth. And I also think that's not a great idea in this setting either, because it's very slow to work. And it's also unpredictable how long it will take. So particularly if you're doing this in the setting of partnered sex, we want everybody to get ready at the same time. And we want it to be relatively quick. We don't want to be, say, let's have sex. Okay, let's wait an hour, you know. So inhalation, but not smoking, which means vaporization, is the best approach because it's rapid and it avoids the smoke. And also it can be shared so that the partners can share. But I also think people often ask about the different types of cannabis, like different strains people talk about. And really, there's no evidence that any of the strains are better than any other. So I wouldn't worry about that. And the last point I would make on this subject is cannabis can create this altered consciousness that we've been talking about. And sometimes, like Suzanne was saying, it can be unusual and maybe even a little bit frightening when you're not used to it. And so if you do that and you're trying to have sex with a partner with all of the pressure that comes with that, that's kind of jumping in the deep end of the pool. And so I recommend to everybody that you start by using cannabis for solo sex, for masturbation, and you do that for a while until you feel comfortable with that before you get involved with your partner, because it's just a whole other person and set of issues to deal with.
And the cannabis to use is like the THC, or it could be CBD. Okay. Okay, because I know like now, and in France, there's a lot of lube that contains CBD. And the feedback that I have from my clients is usually when they use it, they feel like there's more lubrication. And so therefore they can feel the excitement, feel the pleasure quicker. And I don't know if if we could combine the two of them, or if also like the THC could work on the lubrication. Suzanne, you were saying like it helps with a sexual dysfunction. Does it help on every sexual dysfunction, or it helps maybe better with the desire, for example?
I don't think lubrication, and Dr. Becky Lynn, that was one area that it did not help in lubrication, from what I recall. And
that's interesting, because I've seen other studies that suggest that it does.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I think my take on it is it's really pretty helpful across the board when we're talking about THC dominant. The CBD, not so much. There's some evidence that CBD can cause smooth muscle relaxation. So for women who have pain with penetration, that might be helpful. But But the question becomes, like, why not use the THC? And it may be because it's not legal in a certain area. But if we had access to all of these things, that the THC would clearly be the ideal. And the other thing that I think is an interesting problem is that, you know, we tend to think about sex happening kind of down there in the genitals. But in reality, most of sex happens up here between the ears. And so if we use a cannabis lube of any sort, we're really kind of missing most of the most of where we want to work. And the other thing is, lubes are very slow. The absorption of cannabinoids in the vagina takes 40 to 60 minutes. So again, like what I was saying with the edibles, if you are planning sex, you could put the lube on, but then you're gonna have to wait. I mean, I have a friend who's in who works in the lube development field, and she says you can't think of it as lube. You have to think of it as a marinade. You know, it's something you put on and then you sit around for an hour before. And I'm thinking, well, that's great, but who's gonna sit around for an hour with all this goo between their legs and then be in the mood to-
Why not to play, you know, if you have like a playful, you know, like if you have a playground, you play together, you know,
yeah, maybe.
Why not?
You know, I think most people, most people want to get to intercourse faster than an hour, I would guess, right?
Faster, yes. And isn't it a problem, maybe also, like to want it to go fast? And doesn't like letting the body really feel, being exciting enough, knowing what you want, telling the partner, taking the time, isn't it the problem at the beginning, you know, of it?
You know, I think that that's an issue kind of across the board, right? This sex is not something to be rushed. Although, you know, quickies have their place too. So I guess that really is context dependent. I think your idea of having a good play beforehand it sounds great, but it, you know, it's a question of how much and how long, right?
Yeah, and especially if we think also about new parents or parents in general, you don't have much time also. So you want to, you know, you want to have pleasure and you know you have maybe just 15 minutes or 5 minutes, so you need to go fast.
Yes, hard to accomplish much in 5 minutes, 15 maybe, okay. But yes, you're right. The point is that we have to fit all of this in to whatever time we have, and sometimes that's going to work better than other times.
Suzanne, you wanted to add something?
I'm enjoying the conversation. I don't have anything jumping out at me at the moment to say.
Okay, so I have a question for you then, Suzanne. So let's imagine when your research will be done, what is the thing you would like after this research? Like, what kind of results, you know, you are hoping for, and what are you going to do with these results?
Thank you. Thank you for the question. So basically, the hypothesis is that cannabis does help women who have difficulty orgasming during partnered sex. So my hope is to prove that with the results of this observational study. And I've put my dissertation on the back burner right now and am focusing on writing a journal article with Dr. Tischler with these results that we would hope to have published within the next maybe year, 8 months to a year, probably will take. Working with two statisticians right now, one with Qualtrics, is who we did the survey with, and one who's giving us the confidence interval and the p-value and with the clean data. And the next step we're working on getting a grant, working with Florida Atlantic University. We have a principal investigator there who's interested in taking on the study with human subjects as a randomized controlled study, taking the results that we had from this observational study. I don't want to say applying them, but in a sense, seeing what we see that worked and developing inclusion criteria, exclusion criteria based on some of these results, and hoping to see that, yes, that cannabis is a proven pathway to orgasm for women who have difficulty, for a majority, and maybe develop something in the future that will show that is the product.
Like a protocol, how to use cannabis and helping women who have difficulties to reach orgasm, or what is the hope?
You know, we've talked about this a couple of times. I think that the idea of a particular product is probably not ideal in the sense that there are all these products out there and they're, you know, there's not that much difference between them. And I think that in terms of the medicine that we have adequate types of medicine. So really the what we need is to develop, like you said, Camille, is a protocol or a therapy that that women can participate in that helps them kind of bridge the gap, and the cannabis becomes a tool along with all sorts of other sex therapy tools to help them get to where they're more comfortable. And just to summarize something that Susanna touched on, the study that we're completing now is called an observational study. It demonstrates a trend, but it can't prove causality, right? And so the next step to your question, the next step after showing that it seems as though women are benefiting from this would be the randomized controlled trial that Suzanne was talking about, where we then actually are giving women the specific product and measuring their responses to it. And that hopefully will be able to prove that the cannabis is really crucial in that step. And at that point, then I think we can develop this training program that she's talking about.
Yeah, and a training, you know, training women to training therapists, training cannabis, you know, doctors who dispense cannabis. And I think most importantly are the women themselves asking for it. Number one is the women speaking up and saying, I want this. And I want to have it available to me. I have a friend in London that went to get a prescription for cannabis and was turned down for orgasmic difficulty. So the only way, you know, those kind of changes happen with numbers. I just saw the movie She Said last night about sexual harassment and how that changed with the New York Times, you know, in the workplace, and really made public policy changes. And having been an elected official myself, you know, for 4 years in a tumultuous city, for lack of a better word, I know the importance of public policy. And in Florida, you know, I mean, every state has its own policy, but not one of them has a condition of use for female sexual dysfunction. So that's something, if we know, and it's been proven, which it has been, that cannabis were taken for any reason. That's, I think, the caveat here. This is not women who's taking it for sex. It's not, they're not taking it. They're taking it for any reason. And their sexual dysfunction declines by 21%. So that's a pretty powerful statistic that needs to be recognized. And that's kind of my my flag, you know, where I feel myself on that path.
Yeah, I can feel like being passionate about it and like speaking out for all these women and you say it on the podcast because you've been there, so you know it pretty well. And as you were saying, like about the results and the training as a clinical sexologist, I can't wait to be trained also. As I was saying, I know little about it, nothing, and I will need, you know, I will need you to train also the clinical sexologist and the woman as well in this process. So thank you for the work you're doing.
Thank you. That's the plan. I became a sexologist myself to see what they were teaching me so that I could, you know, hopefully my desire in the future is to train female orgasmologists, to develop a training program, train clinicians, train sexologists, sex therapists in this field. So that's where we're headed.
Amazing. One little thing also, because I know that men listen to this podcast and they might have been wondering, what about me? What about me? What cannabis can do for me? So to not take too much time, but like, can you say something about like, is there any research or what we can say about cannabis and men's sexuality?
So cannabis can be helpful for men, actually, very interestingly, in many of the same ways as for women. So all of the advice that we've given today about dosing and the approach to taking cannabis as well as starting solo, all of those that applies to men as well. I mean, men, you know, we talk about men having erectile dysfunction, and it's certainly a real issue. We've got some medicines that work for that. But then there are men who have difficulty with the libido, difficulty with achieving orgasm, and in particular with issues around satisfaction after sex. And cannabis can help boost results in all of those areas. So for men, it's absolutely equally valuable and valid. There is, however, one minor detail, which is that men are more sensitive to the amount of cannabis, and that if they take too much cannabis, they sort of can drift away in their head, and then they lose their erection. And so that can be a problem. So women, you know, if you get them like very stoned, they can still have sex. And whereas men, if they get very stoned, tend to sort of lose the ability to have sex. And so that's really the major difference. I want to go off on a slight tangent for a second and just say also that because we're talking about cannabis, which is an intoxicating substance, which is, of course, how it's working, we also have to take a moment to step back and remember that we need to address issues around consent, right? And
that was my question after.
That everybody needs to be consenting to the sex, to the intoxication, to the relationship, such as it may be, so that we are not having inappropriate relations, and we're not having people who are harmed or upset after the fact. There's no evidence to suggest that people's ability to think clearly enough to give consent is impaired by cannabis in the way we know that it is from alcohol. But nonetheless, the issue is still one that really needs to be addressed up front rather than after the fact.
Yeah, exactly. It's very important because, yeah, when you were talking, I was like, okay, but to give a consent, we can't give a consent under the influence of drugs. So how are we going to deal also with the use of cannabis and the consent? And so you just mentioned it. So it's something to think about it as well.
And I thought it was interesting from the observational survey results that we've done that very few single women are using cannabis before sex. It sounds like it's women who are in trusted relationships that they trust, because my sense is they know that they're in an altered state of consciousness. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's another piece of this data that I need to look a little more into detail with.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting at the denominators of those groups, because it would be interesting. Maybe there are just fewer single females who completed the surveys. I don't know. I look forward to digging into that with you.
And some women, and Camille, I'll mention one other little piece of this that was interesting, is that there was a small percentage of women who it doesn't work for, cannabis. Okay. If they didn't orgasm with it, they didn't orgasm without it.
Mm.
Which, small percentage, but to see what, you know, I did a brief look, and there was many of them had sexual abuse. Higher than average percentage, and it could have also been how often they're using. So these are things that variables that we need to dig a little deeper into to see if there's some commonalities, and that we can develop some kind of treatment for them as well. So there's hope for every woman. That's my point.
Yes, and it's good also to mention that it doesn't work for every woman, and for few women that do not work, maybe, you know, there's a combination of like doing cannabis, but doing also maybe, you know, hypnosis, or like this kind of, you know, different approach as well.
That's correct. Parallel.
Perfect. To finish this podcast, I would like to ask you one word or one sentence of what you wish for women's sexuality.
They can have it.
They can have it.
They can have it. Yeah, they can have it. We can have it.
Thank you.
That's what comes to mind.
I would say great satisfaction.
Thank you so much for your time, Dr. Tischler and Suzanne. I can't wait to hear about the results and your insight and your view on this topic. You know, I'm looking forward to read your article about it. I know I have to wait because it's going to be in a few months, few years, couple of years, but thank you for the work you're doing, for the future of sex, for the research in sexology, we need this kind of people. So it's very important the work you are doing. And thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. And if anyone wants to stay updated on the research, they can go to orgasmproject.org under our research. That lists the research that Dr. Tischler and I have presented so far and where the results will be posted. So, and they can also sign up for our newsletter for updated research information. So it's orgasmproject.org.
I will put it down on the note. Thank you so much.
Thank you. This was wonderful.
Thank you so much, Camille. Thank you, Dr. Tischler. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Et voilà, c'est la fin de cet épisode. Si vous êtes arrivé jusqu'au bout et que vous m'écoutez en ce moment, c'est que cet épisode vous a plu, que vous avez appris des choses, ça je l'espère. D'ailleurs, n'hésitez pas à m'en faire part sur les réseaux sociaux ou encore mieux, de laisser un avis sur votre plateforme d'écoute, par exemple Apple Podcast. Si vous avez des suggestions d'invités ou de thématiques, n'hésitez pas à me le dire sur mon compte Instagram Camille Parle Sexe où je partage également des informations. Si cet épisode vous a fait penser à une amie, à votre voisin, à peut-être des patientes, des clients ou même à votre partenaire, partagez cet épisode avec un message tout doux. En attendant de revenir dans vos oreilles, je vous souhaite de belles expériences intimes. À tout bientôt.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.